But at the end of the day, what it all boils down to is to connect the Newton's third rule, you know, every action has a reaction, to every decision that is made, to identify the opportunities, but also the consequences and the responsibilities in steering the governance and the structures and the processes of companies.
This is Matthias Wikström, founder and CEO of Swedish fintech Dekonomi, which provides a suite of digital services or tools that helps consumers and companies track and measure their climate impact. While Sir Isaac Newton's third of three laws of motion, first published in the 17th century, may feel like an unlikely place to start a podcast on corporate governance in 2022, it does drive to the heart of the matter that companies today, more than ever, need to better understand the direct and indirect impact their actions are having on their stakeholders, the environment and society or communities they operate in. And this isn't just about considering how environmental and social issues can affect their organization's culture and investments, but also how their investments affect the environment and society, a concept known as double materiality. More on that idea and from Matthias a bit later. For now, the big challenge that companies of all sizes, across industries, globally, are facing is working out precisely how they can transition to a more sustainable model, what that looks like, and how they can and should be reporting on their progress. I'm Duncan Kerr, and I'm your host for this third and final episode of Financing a Sustainable Planet, during which I'll be exploring the strategic importance of sustainability to companies, how some are approaching it, and how some fintechs are trying to help them simplify the complexity of reporting their progress. Right now, payments are speaking, and they have a lot to say about your business. Like investing in new ways to pay says you're looking ahead. And accepting more ways to pay says no one's left behind. JP Morgan Payments helps businesses unlock their potential because payments are more than transactions. Every payment speaks volumes. Get started at jpmorgan.com/payments. Products and services of JP Morgan Chase & Co. and its affiliates are subject to applicable terms. Stay tuned for JP Morgan's in-house view later in the episode. In the past few years, there has been an unprecedented shift among companies to transition to a more sustainable model. A primary driver of this is company boards increasingly recognizing that focusing on sustainability can lead to more effective risk management and value creation. Importantly, that recognition has been helped by institutional investors, increasingly seeing it as the board's fiduciary duty to oversee sustainability risks and opportunities that can have a material impact on their company's financial performance. For AP Moller Maersk, one of the largest integrated transport logistics companies, it has been transitioning to a more sustainable business for most of the past decade. Lena Serpa, the group's group head of corporate sustainability and ESG, has been and remains a key figure in the company achieving its aims here. While she is, as might be expected, evangelical about sustainability, she is also grounded in the reality of the challenges it presents.
I am also sort of a strong believer in sustainability being a value driver for business. And the ESG, say, movement that we see these days is adding to it, right? And I think what is particular about it is that it is also driving a more stringent focus on the financial side, right? I mean, really, so taking this concept of, yes, we can create value for business, but how much value and what kind of value and how do we measure it and how do we report on it and how can we be accountable?
These are important questions for any company pursuing a more sustainable business and operating model. In truth, most companies that are in pursuit are still trying to work out the answers to them. What is important in achieving that, though, is positioning sustainability at the core of the business and cultivating buy-in and collaboration across businesses to inform, execute, monitor, and report on the strategy.
So we now have a governance structure for supporting our ESG strategy in Maersk, where, of course, overall the strategy is anchored with our executive leadership team, our board of directors. And then as a general principle, we make sure that the responsibility for all the material topics that we work on, such as decarbonization and safety and diversity, and all of that is really anchored with a business function. So it's not a separate thing on the side, but it's incorporated into the business. But then we have a few central corporate functions, including my own, and working closely both with the corporate strategy team, but also with finance on ensuring the overall direction setting for the strategy.
Collaboration between teams is therefore critical, and especially in the working relationship between the sustainability, finance, and treasury teams.
It certainly also requires a very close collaboration again with finance, because we need to go to that very, very granular level, really into the core of the financial systems to get to that asset level understanding. I really see that increasingly it is necessary for us to have that combination of skills and expertise, right? So the sustainability people, professionals cannot do it by themselves. They absolutely need the finance colleagues involved, need also obviously the, let's say the core, the engineering people, the people who understand the climate science and the fuels, for example, the vessels intimately. So all that needs to come together to create the best solutions and outcomes for our customers, but certainly also the most meaningful reporting to drive our management decisions and to report externally to our stakeholders. But it's definitely a journey, right? And there's some level of training needed both ways, right?
So this is how one large global company sees sustainability, its importance and value, and some of what's required internally to help measure and report on progress toward achieving it. Yet none of this is simple. In fact, the sustainability or ESG reporting piece alone is fluid, complex, and for many companies and their investors, often confusing. For example, recent academic research highlighted that there were over 30 competing definitions of corporate sustainability in use by companies in their ESG reporting and disclosures. What's more, companies and investors are also needing to navigate a mix of multiple global goals, such as the UN's 17 Sustainable Development Goals, reporting frameworks, such as the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures, or TCFD, and the Global Reporting Initiative, and regulations, under the EU Green Taxonomy, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, and the International Sustainability Standards Board. What this shows is that the topic of sustainability is still in flux, with myriad perspectives on not only the appropriate definition of sustainability, but, more critically, on what information, including ESG reporting and disclosures, taxonomies, ESG ratings, and underlying science, data, and modelling capabilities, should best inform capital allocation. For Lena at Maersk, this state of flux is somewhat problematic.
I think what we also see is really this, as you say, there's so much explosion of interest going on, is that there's this mushrooming of all kinds of different initiatives. And just if you look at the different, we were talking about terminologies in the beginning, there is still this overwhelming landscape of different ESG ratings and frameworks, and it's coming slowly, right? There is coming more standardization and the development of international sustainability standards, the EU's corporate sustainability reporting standards, and so there's a development ongoing, but it's sort of progressing slowly. And in the meantime, I think there is still a risk of, you know, at least we have to spend a lot of time from company side sort of explaining, right, what we're doing and getting to a point where we actually, both from the company side and from the financial sector side, actually understand and have a common language. And sometimes I feel that that is diverting, if not attention, then at least potentially wasting some resources, right, which we could be putting to better use of actually just getting going, which we all need, right? Because it's a critical time. It's urgent.
Developing and implementing a framework for companies to report their ESG performance measured against a set of globally consistent standards will take time and political will. But progress on that front is being made. What is fundamentally important to it is the availability of good, trustworthy, and comparable sustainability performance data. While access to such data has been challenging in the past, the challenge is being overcome.
Data always remains an issue. In my personal opinion, sometimes a really good qualitative report is almost better than a slightly more wonky quantitative report, but I think we're moving past that hurdle.
This is Nina Sega, Director of Research at the Cambridge Institute of Sustainable Leadership, or CISL.
And in my number of years in finance, there's never enough data for almost anything. We always want more data. But at the same time, I think there is enough out there to be doing this work. I think some things are more challenging than others. I think, for example, we've seen Bank of England just issue the results of the UK's climate stress test that they've done on banks and insurance companies. I think what they've seen there is a large use of consultants helping to gather this data, to collate this data, to understand exposures. I think they've seen a lot of differentiations in the type of losses predicted. And I think they were talking about the fact how a lot more capacity needs to be built in order to understand the effect of kind of climate stress tests on mainstream financial portfolios. So it's not an easy thing to do. But I think that data methodologies are out there, and I think they will only, we're moving towards standardization, we're moving towards actually starting to work across a number of fields and bringing some alignment in there, because one of my biggest worries is when global companies start reporting, if they have to report in multiple number of jurisdictions across multiple number of requirements. So if we are, you know, if we're building out this reporting system right now, we might as well build a globally aligned reporting system to make it as easy as possible.
As companies work through the complexities of implementing their sustainability strategies and reporting in progress, they are increasingly being supported by a growing band of fintech companies. These include Doconomy, which we heard from earlier, and SaaS platform Datamaran. At the core of their offerings is the actionable insight they can provide companies using the available data. Here's Mariela Lacorte-Alma, founder and CEO of Datamaran, on what problem the company was founded for to help solve.
The original idea was very simple. It was really about helping bring ESG to C-suite. So at my time at GRI, we were working with lots and lots of companies, and typically sustainability, CSR or ESG or whatever the name was not connected to the C-suite, had no seat at the table. So the premise was, can we come up with a data-driven offering that essentially paints a picture on where this stuff is all headed and helps inform which ESG issues are more material for businesses?
Datamaran was launched in 2014, and today the platform tracks over 400 different ESG-related topics.
So we look at regulation, we look at media information, but we also look at the corporate reporting landscape. With this idea in mind of, if we can show how these topics are increasing in prevalence or decreasing in prevalence, we can actually help the C-suite focus. I think one of the challenges with ESG has been that companies maybe relied on the fact that there would be some ultimate standard at some point that would tell you exactly what to do. And although that might be the case for some topics, and maybe carbon is a good example of that, I think it can be standardized to a high degree, and maybe topics like gender pay gap as well. But when it comes to all those other topics that are quite interconnected, it requires a lot of judgment and therefore also homework on the side of the senior decision makers. So getting comfortable with that discomfort, I think, is important.
So what does this look like in practice?
So we're focused on primarily large corporations, the blue chips indeed, large companies with complex value chains. And for them, it's really about understanding which issues matter most and where. In the past 2-3 years, so since the pandemic, we've seen a massive shift in terms of ownership. So previously, we worked primarily with sustainability teams. And a dominant use case there was materiality. So essentially doing prioritization of ESG for the purpose of a separate ESG report, or sometimes integrated into an annual report for those that were a bit more progressive. But for now, that ownership of that exercise of materiality has become a strategic exercise owned by senior decision makers. So we're seeing the CFO, we're seeing general counsel, we're seeing the corporate secretary, we're seeing public affairs. But it's really now a C-suite endeavor to have a good understanding of those material and emerging issues and to essentially back it up from that level.
While different platforms, there is a similarity in mission between Data Moran and Doconomy to ultimately support the world's transition to a low-carbon world. For Doconomy, the company provides a variety of digital tools to help consumers and companies do this. Some of these tools are important for helping companies in particular report their Scope 1, 2, and 3 greenhouse gas emissions. Essentially, Scope 1 emissions are those which companies generate directly. Scope 2 emissions are those caused by the energy used by the company. And Scope 3 covers indirect emissions from upstream and downstream activities in a company's value chain, such as suppliers and distributors, or relating to how customers use the company's products. Here's Doconomy's Matthias Wikström on how they can help companies.
At Doconomy, one of our core products is to make every transaction count, converting the money spent into a carbon intensity or freshwater component. And the data rendered through that is then provided to the end user, or the flip side is, of course, that the banks would know the total carbon footprint of their consumer credit portfolio, and they could direct measures into incentivizing lower impact based on those findings. The people that we work with in the transaction space differs widely. This is a market in the making, and we see both the CFO, we see the Chief Sustainability Officer, we also see the CTO, or we see the CMO addressing this from different angles, addressing different opportunities or different requirements. We also see quite a lot of interest top-down in regard of board members looking at this as a strategic topic out of a positioning and risk perspective. So the user journey would basically be to make the transactions communicate not only the monetary impact, but also the planetary impact. So that's for the financial services sector. And then with that data at hand, they can make decisions in regard of what they want to lend money to, or to enable people or companies to invest in regard of accelerating the transition to begin with to a more sustainable tomorrow. The second service we have, which is more bottom up, is calculating every carbon footprint on product level, using cradle to gate metrics and enabling SMEs to do that. But also the most common use case would be to present that on a carbon label of sorts, or informing around the product pre-purchase. However, it's also used by designers and architects in regard of pre-production planning, getting to understand the impact of their material choices and so forth, so that when they actually go into production, they've already done all they can to reduce the footprint of the product itself. We were also now looking into circularity metrics, which are extremely important to get to the market, as circularity is one of the key components for succeeding in hitting the targets we need to see anyways.
Without doubt, companies across industries globally need all the help they can get on their sustainability strategies and reporting their progress. Fintechs such as Data Moran and Doconomy, among others, are making a difference. But companies and their investors need much more help from governments, standard setters, and regulators. Yet, companies also need to step up and proactively engage in helping to find solutions for some of the challenges.
I think oftentimes that the whole standardization and comparability argument I find is sometimes used as an excuse for inaction. I actually think that there's a lot of data available publicly that can give you good signal as to where this is moving. And you don't need the best quality data in the world to be able to see trends, especially when, for our use case, it's about analyzing these external landscapes in terms of media, regulatory, and corporate reporting data. So we do with what we have. But of course, I think there's a role to play there in terms of also understanding who's behind it and who's signing off if the data gets audited, who actually agreed on the focus areas of the business. Do they have a clear understanding of how these specific issues that they decided to focus on, you know, whether that's climate or human rights, how they are impacting their company? And at the same time, also how their business is impacting these issues potentially. So both sides, the double materiality piece.
Deconomy's Matthias takes a similar view.
I completely agree to that. You know, waiting for perfect data is not going to get us anywhere. We need to play with what we have. However, the data and the integrity of data need to further evolve as well. And that will be instrumental in regard of regulatory measures. You know, the governance structures put in play is really about identifying who has the power and the accountability. And that is becoming more and more relevant on an individual level. Looking at what we do at Deconomy, working with leading banks and financial services providers, where board level and C-level are increasingly pushing for a governance structure that adheres to setting targets and measurability around sustainability.
Voluntarily, companies will transition at a pace that suits them. But that's part of the problem. Not enough of them are transitioning at the pace they need to. For Mariella at Data Moran, mandatory reporting could be the game changer.
I think we need to see more and more regulation on this, unfortunately. I think initially the idea was as long as it's a voluntary effort, companies will see it as competitive advantage and we'll see some kind of race to the top. That has not happened. It has remained a small group of companies that really want to lead. So I think the impact that we're seeing from the EFRAG efforts in the EU as well as the SEC getting involved is massive. And the newcomers in terms of corporations getting started and immediately taking it much more seriously has been massive. So I think increased regulation, more and better regulation, will move the needle.
That argument is well supported. But regulation and good, solid regulation takes time to develop and implement. Most immediately, companies need to take a more urgent approach to their own transition, or, for those that don't, suffer the consequences of their inaction. Here's Nina Sieger from CISL again.
I think one of the biggest arguments is that they're currently facing some very substantial environmental sorts of risks that they as yet don't understand. They are not measuring them and they're certainly not managing them. And if you are managing a corporate and you're not adjusting to the environment in which that corporate operates, or a financial institution, and you're not adjusting to the environment in which that financial institution operates, you're putting that institution at risk. So I think, you know, they're effectively within kind of the global conversation, we're very much on our way. We're no longer talking about whether we will transition. The only question right now is how we will transition, whether it will be a managed transition or whether it will be an abrupt, unmanaged, very financially, economically painful transition for all of us. So with, you know, when faced with that choice, my choice would be to actually move towards a more managed approach.
The views exchanged on this podcast are of a general nature and do not constitute financial advice. Please consult a professional advisor before making any investment decisions. You're listening to the third in the series of In-House View with JP Morgan. Today, we're looking at sustainability, its importance, and the governance around it. I'm speaking to Yusuf Mohammed, Head of Sales and Client Strategy for EMEA at JP Morgan Payments. Yusuf, great to speak to you. Now, we've heard from various companies over the course of this series about their sustainability drive, but what is JP Morgan doing to advance sustainability objectives and how are these activities being governed?
That's a great question. Thank you, Duncan. You know, our ambition in terms of the role that we play has gone up year and year and year. And I think we've really hit a milestone a couple of years ago when you know, we announced that we're going to align our financing commitments to the Paris Agreement goals. And then since then, we've really put a lot more flesh and a lot more kind of numerical targets and sector targets around what we mean by that. And so we have made a commitment of 2.5 trillion over the course of 10 years in terms of, you know, financing sustainable development. Now, we don't think, if you think of the E, S, and G, this is not purely the 2.5 trillion is around green. Like about 1 trillion of that whole bucket is dedicated towards green financing. But the remainder is really also around other topics, around financial inclusion, around development finance, things that are very much top of the agenda from a sort of US, you know, SDG perspective, but not specifically on decarbonization. So we've really taken a holistic approach and quite an ambitious one. So that's one key component. The second is, you know, we do not succeed in a vacuum without really helping our clients. I think a lot of times banks come under criticism for, you know, financing the fossil fuel sector, oil and gas exploration and so forth. I think, especially this year, that that conversation has shifted still, and there's a little bit more nuance attached to it, given the fact that we're thinking about decarbonization, which matters a huge amount, but we're also thinking around energy security. And I think our position as a bank is that instead of just walking away from sectors wholesale and just taking a negative screening approach, what we really want to do is to say, look, we're going to work with our clients, longstanding clients of ours, in order to facilitate the transition. So think of all these oil and gas companies, auto companies that are developing and investing new technologies. We really want to be part of that dialogue and really be part of the solution as opposed to making it somebody else's problem. So that is something, you know, we set up a carbon compass methodology and to kind of, you know, be very transparent about the emission targets and emission intensity targets that we are looking to reduce sector by sector. So we've kind of made sure that we are targeted and based on what we're looking at, rather than just have a one size fits all, or we're going to say, you know, asset reduction of X, Y, Z. So that's one key thing. The key sectors we're focused on at the start of this journey is going to be, not surprising to anybody on this sort of conversation, oil and gas, electric power, and auto manufacturing, just given the huge amount of focus and the carbon footprint associated with them. So that's a key point for us. And we, you know, we're really working with clients at different levels of the organization. If you think around the CEOs in terms of, you know, M&A transactions, that sits outside the immediate business that I sit in, but it's something that JP Morgan is very much kind of clearly involved with from an M&A perspective and advisory. But we're really taking it down to the transactional level activity. So where I sit in JP Morgan Payments, we work with treasurers. And the approach that we're taking is to say, look, you as a treasurer, how can you think about deploying your corporate assets, your cash, in a way that is most sustainable, that can help your company advance its objectives? How can you implement certain practices within your own company, let's say around employee retention and things of that nature that fall under the S bucket? What sort of solutions can we offer as a JP Morgan payments organization to help them sort of drive in that direction? So given the multiplicity of businesses that we operate in a corporate investment bank, we're very, very keen to make sure that we're kind of, you know, we stick to the highest standards. And so we have very robust governance process within JP Morgan in terms of what gets labeled as ESG and what doesn't, and what falls outside of the remit. It might be beneficial, but it's not necessarily something that we feel will survive the test of time in terms of what regulators consider to be ESG. So we're very, very kind of joined up as one bank in terms of looking at what's happening on the capital markets side, what's happening on the treasury side, and making sure that whatever we're doing is really driving kind of the same overall objectives. And also is something, you know, to the point that was mentioned earlier, would it survive its kind of scrutiny in Europe as well as in Asia, and if the SEC looks at it in the US? And so that's something that's very complex, very evolving, but we're very much, you know, focused on that as a key priority.
Turning to your clients, how are you seeing corporates adapt to evolving governance requirements across regions and industries?
I think, look, a lot of the companies that we work with, our clients, are multinational companies. So even, you know, where the headquarters are obviously imposes certain nuances in terms of the type of regulator they're answerable to and the types of the shareholder base that and to what extent that shareholder base is active on ESG matters. And I think that will vary, right? So with heard this in this, you know, talked about this in this conversation today, there is more shareholder activism on ESG in the US across the board. And it tends to be around the S and the G, and sort of, you know, the governance as well as the social layer, with the environmental, you know, very, very quickly catching up. I do think that since the new administration has come in, the environmental agenda has definitely kind of, it's not where Europe is in terms of codification, but it's top of mind when I talk to US headquarter clients. Having said that, I'm going to contradict myself and say, look, those clients, wherever they're headquartered, they're operating across the globe. And so to some extent, they're having to, you know, the binding constraint is the most stringent kind of market that they work in and they operate in. So in some ways, I think Europe has become a bit of regulatory superpower when it comes to things, all things ESG. If you look to, let's say, supply chain construct and supply chain financing agreement that gets done, what even if you have a client that is headquartered out in Asia or headquartered in the US, the suppliers might be sitting here in Europe, some of the suppliers. And so what counts, what sort of KPIs, the nomenclature, the types of KPIs that we look at, I think is very much, you know, Europe has set the standard there. And we're seeing other regions, not necessarily copy, but really take inspiration from the level of detail and the level of rigor that's been developed in the European markets. So I think overall, you know, the environmental type agenda and the sorts of KPIs, scope one, scope two, scope three, and what clients are looking at is becoming more consistent globally, but we're not quite yet seeing this kind of convergence on the S, on the social metrics, as well as the governance aspects of things. I think that will still remain somewhat, you know, kind of diverse and nuanced based on which region, also based on which industry that client is in.
Thanks to JP Morgan for supporting this latest series in Financing a Sustainable Planet, which was written and presented by me, Duncan Kerr. It was edited by John Ryan, and it's an Earshot Strategies production.